I'm going to share with you some things in terms of publishing, but I've left a lot of time for questions and answers. And so I thought I'd start, because this is an academic group, with some history. So 10 years ago, I attended a writers' conference, and there was a pretty well-known author, who I will not name, who stood up in front of a keynote lunch audience and asked everyone in the audience if they had a manuscript they were thinking about publishing. Now, at the time, there's probably about 400 to 500 people in this audience, and every hand went up. And she said, in somewhat of a snarky way, well, you know, only about 10 of you will ever get to that goal. And I've never seen a room be so depressed despite having a wonderful lunch. But the reality was, is 10 years ago, her statement, though cruel, was very true. Because publishing, even 10 years ago, really only presented one opportunity for authors. And that was to find an agent and to hope that that agent could find a publisher that would sell that book and put it into the marketplace. But roll forward 5 years later, in an industry that really hadn't changed much since Gutenberg's press, was undergoing phenomenal changes. Between Gutenberg and about 2009, the really only significant development might have been the paperback. But starting around 2000, three technologies came about, and the convergence of those technologies set in motion changes in publishing that have been phenomenal to watch over the last 15 years. The first was the internet, because it was a distribution device. The second was desktop publishing, because that was an opportunity for people no longer to use typesetting. And the third was print-on-demand technology. Now, in the early and late 1990s and early 2000s, all of those were a bit rudimentary. But as with most technological developments, they improved greatly. And so you get to about 2009, and I had an opportunity to speak to a group of people. And so I thought I would use that same opening line. Again, hundreds in the audience. I said, how many of you have a manuscript? Everyone raised their hand. And I said, do you know that every one of you can get that book into the market today? Because what had happened is, at the time, what I described as the next indie revolution, what had already happened in film and music was now going to take place in publishing. Publishing people thought of indie as independent press, meaning a press that's not associated with a big publishing company. But I meant it in a completely different way. And I remember a particular interview I did with a reporter from the San Bernardino paper. You could tell over the phone that she was a young reporter. And I described self-publishing not as the bastard stepchild of publishing, but as this revolution that was taking place, which we'd already seen in film and music. And she goes, oh, so it's cool. And I said, yes, that's exactly right. So we wrote this white paper, and it started to stir up conversations. And some people agreed, and some people disagreed, and some people loved us, and some people hated us, and all that. And then following that, wrote a second white paper called The Democratization of Publishing. Because at the time, self-publishing was starting to accelerate, and all the criticism was coming from traditional publishers, because it was, oh, it's all crap. There's so many bad books. And the argument I was making is, yes, and there are bad candidates that run for office. But the most important thing is that people have the opportunity to do that. And in the end, voters get to speak what candidates get elected, and readers will now get to speak more so than the gatekeepers who happen to be on both coasts. And in the end, that was a better thing. Democracy was a better thing. Again, some people embraced that idea. Some people said, still. But then, as this accelerated, what we saw is publishing became, for authors, no longer a wholesale business where they had to find someone to sell it to, someone who could get it to the consumer, but it actually became a consumer business. Authors going direct to consumer, and authors becoming consumers themselves, which had never happened in the history of publishing. And so today, you sitting here with a manuscript are now a consumer of publishing services. And I'm sure Gutenberg had no idea when he first did his printing press that that was going to be the outcome. But that's where we sit. So I wrote another white paper called The Best Time in History to Be an Author, advocating that there was more choice and opportunity than ever before. People agreed with that. But subsequent to that, what I discovered is all this choice and opportunity was actually creating confusion. Authors who had never been consumers before, who only had one choice before, were now confused about, what should I do? How can I sort through all the myriad of options? There's ebooks, there's Amazon, there's CreateSpace, there's Smashwords, there's traditional publishers. There's all these different ways for me to print. There's social media, there's Twitter. What am I supposed to do? And that was summarized for me very well at a panel that I was on and a Q&A session, and this woman stepped up to the mic during the point, and she just, out of exasperation, her question was, what am I missing? She was so exasperated because she was doing all these things, but she wondered if in all this myriad of choices, if she was missing something. It's like being at a buffet and thinking, oh, I missed the lobster, but I had the steak. And so out of that, I wrote this white paper, which we've had copies of, and what I'm going to talk to you about today, which is the four paths to publishing. And the whole goal in this discussion is to help you try and sort out what are the options out there and what's the best thing for you to do. Now, a little bit about me. I'm actually the Senior Vice President of Marketing for Author Solutions, but the way I came to the company was actually self-publishing a book. And so I've actually since then self-published three books. Eli the Stable Boy, which is a children's book, which is a story I told to my daughters when they were younger. And they said, Dad, they're now in their 20s, they said, Dad, you got to write that book. I said, I don't have time to write that book. And they said, Dad, you work for a publishing company, write the book. I've had some wonderful, wonderful experiences. And then I've written an e-book, Seven Secrets of Successful Self-Published Authors. I've also just had opportunity to speak at a lot of different things. And then I actually have a blog, which we'll talk about, indiebookwriters.com, where I just try and write about things like that. So that's who I am. So I come at the business not just from someone who's employed, and I should say just as an aside about Author Solutions, we are the world's largest supported self-publishing company, and I'll talk to you about that. But in July 2012, we were actually purchased by Penguin. So it was probably one of the most significant changes in the industry in a long time, because here was one of the most respected publishing companies buying a self-publishing company, and it created all kinds of controversy. So I'm actually work for Author Solutions, but we're owned by the world's largest publisher, because then in July 2013, Penguin and Random House merged. So it's very interesting. Now, as I said, it is the best time in history to be an author, because there's more choice and opportunity, but that choice and opportunity creates confusion. So the tweet I made today, or the tweet I sent out this morning, was hoping to bring clarity to authors today. Because I'm not going to sit here and tell you this is what you should do. I'm going to lay out for you the way to think about and a framework for you to think about the different projects that you have and how you might be able to take advantage of what's out there. So the topics we're going to cover today is some questions to ask yourself before you publish. And many of you are already accomplished in your authoring, but I always like to start here because sometimes it's very easy to just get going on writing a manuscript and not really taking a thoughtful approach to whether I should actually publish this, what it takes to get a book published, the four paths, which is where I'm going to spend most of my time, and then I'm going to talk about the advantages and drawbacks of each path and then how to choose the best path for you. So I have had an opportunity to hear a number of different speakers, and so these questions that I'm going to share with you are not actually mine originally. Because when I saw this list, I thought if I were going to write a list of questions, these are the questions I would ask. They're actually from a book written by a woman named Ariel Excott, and she's an agent, and she's written a book on the essential guide of getting your book published, how to write it, sell it, and market it successfully. And here are some questions that I think she's put forth in her book that I think are very good for you to think about. So, simple. Is there a book out there like mine? Well, that doesn't mean if there's a cookbook out there that you shouldn't publish another cookbook. But what is the unique thing that you're bringing in your book? What's the unique thing that you're bringing about your perspective? Is there an audience for a book like mine? Particularly as you think about self-publishing, this is one of the areas that most authors don't think about. They think about maybe in terms of institutionally, well, it's for schools or it's for libraries. But you have to be more specific than that if you're going to be successful in doing this. I ask this question of authors all the time. One of my favorite answers I get periodically is, and I actually got this from a guy, he said, every man, woman, and child on the planet. I told him I appreciated his ambition, but maybe he should start a little smaller, like maybe just China or India or something like that. And then, can I produce this book on my own, right? The opportunity is there now for you to produce a book, actually through desktop publishing, through ebooks, through upload tools, through all this stuff. But can you produce it on your own, or do you need assistance? Can I sell the book on my own? This really comes down to distribution. And can I put it into the system so that it's accessible to all readers on all devices in all formats? Now, there are certain options that you have that will limit your distribution, and depending on what you're doing, that may be a good option for you. This is part of my bias. I believe that you should have your book available on every device in every format, because readers still differ in how they want to consume their content based on the book and based on the device. So even in my own home, I have an iPad. My wife has a Kindle. I can kind of sideboard stuff onto my iPad. It's a hassle. I just want to go to the iBookstore. I have money on account. Boom, I'm done. She has a Kindle. Boom, she's done, right? So if you're limited in your distribution, we might not buy those books. But there are some books I know personally that I like to consume in print still. About 4 years ago, I did an interview with a blogger, and I said in that, I predicted that ebooks at the time would level off. And he actually wouldn't put that in the article, in the interview, because he thought that people would think I was crazy. And my prediction on that wasn't scientific research. I just watched the reading habits in my own home. And I found myself, you know, everyone ran to Kindles and ran to iPads and all that. But then I thought there were some books that I really still wanted to stack on my desk and read. And I saw the same thing in my daughters who were in school, and I saw the same thing in my wife. And so I knew at some point there are some books that are easier to read, but you want to make sure that people can make that decision. How will I garner publicity for my book? How will I, which is another way to say, how will I find readers? And can I create professional packaging for my book? Designing a cover for a print book and designing a cover for an ebook are actually two different skill sets. What it looks like as a thumbnail and what it looks like on the shelf at Barnes & Noble are very different. So you better work with people or have the skills and talents that you need to make sure that that happens. So those are all important questions for you to ask as you go through and think about your book. Now, I've always been fascinated by this. Why do some people publish and others do not? Now, as I said, I've authored 3 books, but the biggest thing I've done is I've had the opportunity, and I should probably change this to thousands of conversations with authors. I enjoy opportunities like this because it gives me opportunities to really talk to people and find out what are the things that they're doing that make some of them successful and some of them not. And what I have found over time is that there are 6 common characteristics of people who are taking advantage of the self-publishing options that exist out there. And that's what I'd like to share with you today. So there are 6 tips on how to get published. So this is a simple one. And none of these things for a group like this are going to be like, rocket science. But it's just listing them in a way that makes you think about what you're doing as a self-publisher. So the first thing is set a date when you want to hold a copy of your book. You know what's interesting? When you work with a traditional publishing company, they give you a date when you got to turn your manuscript in. But one of the things that I found when people are thinking about self-publishing is they actually don't set a date. And so it just drifts and drifts and drifts because life just gets in the way. And as I've worked with self-published authors over the years, you know, what I've said is it could be a real date or it could be an artificial date. And one of my favorites is there was a gentleman who had really wanted to write a book, and he decided he wanted to give everyone a copy at his 50th birthday party. And that was his idea. There's been other people that, you know, they've been presenting content and they had it in PowerPoints and they thought, you know, I'm going to speak at this thing. I should have a book that I could sell. And the book that I wrote, which is Eli the Stable Boy, it's a children's story. It's based on the nativity story. I had a deadline to have it ready for the Christmas season, right? And so it doesn't really matter what the date is, but it matters that you set a date. And that is a really simple thing. The second thing is you want to create a timeline to get there. So if you've published before, you'll know what the process is, but then you have to put that discipline in yourself. And sort of the key milestones are, when's your manuscript? You have to back up from when do you want to hold the copy of your first book? Back up from that date. And then you decide, when do I have to have my manuscript complete? How much time do I need to go for editing? When do I need to submit it? How much time am I going to do for design? Because if you're going to do ebooks or print or hardcover, all that makes a difference. And then how long is it going to take to print and put it into the marketplace? You either need to know those things yourselves, or you need to work with someone who can help you build that timeline. And one of my favorite stories is we go to the Miami Book Fair every year. It's one of my favorite events for consumers. It's, I think, the oldest book fair in the country. They close off some streets in downtown Miami. And there was a woman who came to our booth the first day, and it's a Friday, Saturday, Sunday event. And I'm not exaggerating. She had a list of questions on a pad of paper. Every line was filled. So we sat there and we answered her questions. She came back the next day, and she had another page of questions. She came back on Sunday with more questions. And the people who work for on my team who are in the booth, you could just tell it was like a WWF match. They were ready for someone to tag her out because she was just wearing it out. So I stepped in, and I looked at her, and I asked her this question. I said, have you ever thought about where you want to do your first book signing? And it just stopped her in her tracks, almost like I'd asked her a question. I've uncovered a secret. And she kind of quietly said, well, yeah, I have. I said, well, tell me about that. She said, well, I'm from Minnesota, and we always have a family reunion every year. And she goes, I thought it'd be really fun to have my first book signing at that family reunion or around that in the town I grew up in. I said, when's your family reunion? She said, it's in July. And this is November when I said, you can get there. And she stopped asking questions because the key is she had actually set a date in her mind and she'd never told anyone that. And then what we did is said, okay, where are you and can we get you? You know, she was pretty far along with her manuscript. So she was asking all this other stuff, which is all important in the process. But the most important thing is pick the date. Pick the date and set a timeline. And then, this is a simple thing, but determine the best time for you to write and block that time on your calendar. Perhaps if you're an accomplished author and publisher or a writer already, you've already figured this out. But this is one of the simple secrets that I've learned. And I've tested this hypothesis on authors many times. In fact, there was one author that I was sitting with a few years ago, and she's been very prolific. She's traditionally published about 20 books. She writes in a particular genre, Christian fiction. And she's then self-published some books because she now teaches writing conferences. And I was sitting with her and her husband at lunch, and I just was beginning to see this common characteristic. And so I started to ask her, I said, do you have a particular time that you're more effective at writing than others? And she before she could even answer, her husband said, 5:30 in the morning. He had known her well enough. And so what I find is that people that are effective actually understand that and they block that time. They make an appointment with themselves. And they'll be far more productive in that hour or 2 hours of writing than they will some other time. And then you want to make yourself accountable to someone, right? I mean, again, these things are simple, but these common characteristics get you to your goal. When you're working with a traditional publisher, you're usually accountable to your editor or your publisher. But if you're not, it could be a colleague, it could be a spouse, it could be someone. But make yourself accountable. And then start planning your promotion before you finish your manuscript. Writing is such a difficult task. But these days, you really have to start cultivating your audience before you actually have your book ready. And too many authors wait till their book is done, and then they actually start thinking about promotion. I've seen some authors do some very clever things through social media. Sometimes they'll select 3 different titles and let their readers, potential readers, vote on it. Or they'll put up different cover designs and let their readers vote on it. And then what they'll do is they'll use that to build their mailing list so that when their book is ready, they've got something to email to. Again, none of this is rocket science, but it's discipline, and it's thinking of things in a different way. And then decide how you're going to reach your audience. I go back to that. So depending on what kind of book you have, as I've shared these principles with authors, I've just been fascinated by the creativity that they've used to get to their audience. There's a woman that I know that's written some historical fiction novels around Ireland. And as she thought through these principles, she said, you know, there are Irish festivals all over the country. I wonder if that would be a place to sell my books. And so she'll find Irish festivals and go set up her booth, and she sells a ton of books, which, if you have the right distribution, you're creating a groundswell of people who read your book, they go home, they tell someone else, because word of mouth, no matter what anyone tells you, is still the most powerful way to sell a book. And then because it's available on Amazon or iPad or whatever, then the person that who read the book, who bought it at the Irish Special, tells someone else and they pull it down. So thinking about that is really important. And then the last thing, which is, I thought about this as I was going to address a group who obviously are from the Academy. Plan an event to celebrate the publication of your event. This is the one tip I've given to authors that I hear more about than any other thing on this on these slides. And people have been very, very creative. One of my, I have a couple favorite stories, but one of them is there's a woman who I know who wrote a mystery book, and she set it in her hometown, and apparently there was a restaurant in that hometown where some of the activity took place. And the she decided she wanted to do her book launch party at that restaurant. And the restaurant owner was so taken with it that he named some menu item after a character in her book, and now at the cash register they sell her book. But the joy of that is actually recognizing how many or how few people actually get to the point of having a finished book. And I myself, we did that Eli the Stable Boy. We invited 100, well, actually, I don't know how many we invited, but 100 people showed up in December around the holiday with my daughters who were there, and we signed copies, and we had, you know, it was just this wonderful time. It's one of my favorite memories of being an author. And so there's all these different things, and some people think it's self-serving, but you'll be surprised how much fun and joy it will put in your life. So those are the six tips I see that are successful self-published authors. Now, as you think about those six tips, and we'll come back for questions, the next thing you have to do is you get to the point where you're going to publish, and you have to understand what options you have today. And so there are four options. These are the four paths. Do it yourself, and I'm going to talk about these in detail. General contractor, supported self-publishing, and then traditional publishing. Those are the four paths. The key differences are who owns the content, the investment of time and money, and speed to market. So those are the four paths that we're going to talk about. So let's talk about which path is best for you. And when I say which path is best for you, it may not be which path is best for you on every project, but you may be able to use different paths depending on what project you're working on, and you may actually use two paths even in one project. So the first path is what I call do-it-yourself. And this is where you would simply upload a manuscript and format. There are many options out there, but a lot of them typically are ebook only. Some offer print formats. Examples are Book Tango, Book Country, Lulu, Kindle is this way, Smashwords. The disadvantage of these is that they tend to be limited formats and limited distribution. The one thing that's a little bit of a misnomer is publishing is never really free, right? You can format for free, you can upload for free. But the reality is unless you're just this wonderful, almost superstar who can edit and design covers and all that, you're going to need to find some help, and you're probably going to have to pay for some professional services. But one advantage of this is that you can test the work. So the beauty of an ebook or an upload is you don't have this big inventory of books sitting somewhere that you have to sell. So you can put something out and find out that it's changed, and then you can update it. And just simply reformat the book, and it's that simple. So if you have something that you're working on or you want to test, it's a really great way to test. But it's you doing everything yourself. The general contractor path is the second path, and that's where you work with independent contractors. You either do it yourself or you hire someone. When I say independent contractors, you find a cover designer, you find an editor, you find someone who can lay out your book, you find someone who can do your EPUB formats, you get your ISBNs. The beauty is that option is available to you. And what it really comes down to is whether you want to do that yourself, or there are now new careers being created because people are coordinating all the tasks for you. This is a small list, but these are some of the things that have to be done just to get a book into the marketplace. Notice the top two bullets are the only thing that have to do with actually writing. You have to find an ISBN, and this isn't a full list, but these are like essential things. You have to get copyright, edit, cover design, interior, ebook formatting, illustrations, cover copy, distribution for each format, print books, track royalties, ship books, sell books, website, social media, publicity, events, video interview, video trailer. Most books, a lot of books will have that. So again, if you have time and you have resources, you can find all these resources to be able to do that, but it requires you to coordinate. And the coordination is really important because as I've talked to authors who've pursued this path, knowing the timing of all these things, you got to have your cover done so that they can do your book trailer, so that they can do your website. And you can actually give them that before your book is live. But you've got to coordinate. So if you're a really good project manager, this is a path for you to pursue. The third path is what I call supported self-publishing. And supported self-publishing is you work with a company who packages all the services for you. It's a one-stop shop for professional services, and it's like eating at a nice restaurant versus cooking at home or going to a deli. So let me illustrate this a different way. If you have to make a meal, there are three options you have. You can make it at home. Now, that's dependent on your talent, the resources you have available, and the time you can put into it. That's what DIY is. General contractor is like going to a deli. There, you're probably going to spend a little bit more money, but it's going to take you less time, and you are relying on the talent and resources of someone else to prepare what you need to meet your goal. Supported self-publishing is like going to a restaurant. You have a menu of items. You're still in charge of what you spend, but you don't have to go looking for everything. Everything that you could possibly want is there. And so then you pick based on the package of services. If you want an appetizer, that's fine. If you don't. And so that's the way to think about it, because there are people out there, and I find this fascinating in this space, there are people out there who will advocate that the way they published is the only way that anyone should publish. But they don't take into consideration that there's a difference in time and talent and budget and what you're trying to accomplish. So an example is with Archway, and I just showed this, is these are the kinds of packages that have been built on Archway. So you see everything that you would need, the launch package, enterprise, it gives you all these different opportunities depending on what your goals are, and all of that's available to you. Now, that's not listed in any of the literature I gave you, but it is available on the website. And what it really comes down to is, do you want to eat at the restaurant or make the meal at home? And one of the first things I think it was the conversation I had with Mike, is I think when, and I get this a lot because I work for Author Solutions, is everyone's afraid I'm going to do a big ad for Author Solutions. Actually, I'm not. What I think is what we offer, which we primarily are the leader in this supported self-publishing, works for some authors, and it works for some projects. We have an author that teaches, he's a middle school teacher, he teaches world history to middle schoolers, which that in himself should get him a free ticket to somewhere. But he's very passionate. He's actually in his 60s now, but he now teaches, he's written a book. His name is Jerry Parks. You can get his book on iUniverse. But he actually does a teaching on the weekends for certification for something around how to teach middle school kids. And so what he did is he did one book so that it's available in distribution, and then he needs a workbook to give these people who attend. So he just did that on Lulu, because he doesn't need everyone to be able to buy that thing from Amazon. He sells 30 of them on a weekend, right? But he doesn't want to carry them himself. He just tells them, go to Lulu. Perfect example of someone who takes advantage of supported self-publishing for one book and a DIY option for another book to get him to his goal. And then the last path, which I would suspect many of you are most familiar with, is traditional publishing, and that is that you usually need an agent. Now, some people say, well, traditional publishing is going away, and there's all this problem between Amazon and Hachette, and traditional publishing, just like film companies and just like music companies, will continue to be around because it provides a service that other people can't provide by doing it themselves. Now, what it's done is it's created all these unique situations where traditional publishers are bringing the scale and expertise to curate the content in ways that they haven't done before. One of the more interesting ones was a guy named Hugh Howey, who published, self-published, it was his eighth book called Wool, and it took off. And he retained the ebook rights, but gave Simon & Schuster the print rights. Again, so many different opportunities because it's the best time in history to be an author. But the interesting thing is, it wasn't that long ago that the only way that you could be discovered was to go through an agent. Well, I will tell you right now that you can be discovered through any of those other paths. And I say that because part of what we've done as Author Solutions is we have partnerships. We run the self-publishing imprint for Simon & Schuster. We run a self-publishing imprint for Hay House. We run a self-publishing imprint for Reader's Digest. We run a self-publishing imprint for HarperCollins. And then we have international imprints that we run with Penguin. And we have other ones that we're in the process. And the reason traditional publishers are doing that is because they want to see these self-published titles. And they have picked them up. We're actually going to launch a new website the week after, and we're going to list all the titles that have been picked up because they're finding them. The other thing is, this is about a Miami Book Fair story, but a few years ago I was at Miami Book Fair, and two agents came to talk to me, and they didn't want to be seen talking to me. They asked if we could go behind the tent. I was like, what is this, a drug deal? am I going to be a mule and carry? But no, I'm not making this up. They're like, yeah, I'm really interested in this self-publishing thing. Could we step around the back, so that no one could see you talking to me, right? It's unbelievable. But now agents have completely given up on that and have now come forward to embrace that. But the other thing that's interesting is it's going to need to fit their catalog, right? So a publisher is going to need to fit the catalog, and it's going to take you some time to get out there. So let me go through this chart real quick because I do want to make sure we leave some time for questions. But the advantages and drawbacks of each. So are you going to have to invest dollars? The reality is you're going to have to invest some money no matter what you do. And anyone, as I said, you can put out a really, really crappy book and spend no money. But it's probably going to need to be edited, and you're probably going to need someone to design covers, or you're going to have to train yourself to do that. And even if you do, you're going to have to buy some software so you can do it right. And ebooks require different formats. EPUB and Mobi are different formats. So you're going to need to learn how to do that. Because you can actually really, really put out an unreadable ebook more easily than you can a bad print book. So you're going to need to know what you're doing there. The time invested, this is my opinion, but I think the most you're going to invest is general contractor, where you're going to have to coordinate everything yourself. And if you know what you're doing, you can. The services that you're going to need, with DIY, they're limited services. You'll find services that you can get, but they're not easily accessible. General contractor, you have to find them. And so you have to go out and you can find an editor, you can find a cover designer, but you better make sure that they know what they're doing. Because an editor, you want someone who can edit the type of book that you're writing. And then supported self-publishing, as I said, it's a menu of services. It's a one-stop shop. You go there and they have everything you need. And then traditional, obviously you'll have services. The biggest thing, I think, in the difference between the first three, which are self-publishing and traditional, is who controls how fast it gets to the market. I was talking to an author who's about to get signed with a traditional publisher. The book is done. It's very, very likely it may not come out till 2016 because they have their list almost filled for 2015. So this book is in the market. It's a self-published book, and they're selling it, and they still may not get it out for a year and a half. Because that's what they do. That's not always the case, but you control how fast it gets to the market. I think this is absolutely critical because I will tell you that if you are ultimately looking for a traditional publishing contract, getting it into the market, demonstrating sales velocity, finding an audience, and having material that people are interested in will get you more quickly to a traditional publisher than doing it maybe and trying to go through an agent. The reason I say that is, a few years ago, again, a different book fair, LA Book Fair, I had a woman come to me. Her father had been a B actor his whole life, had worked with all these greats in movies, and he just wanted to write this memoir about his experiences. And she asked about self-publishing, and I explained it to her. And she said, well, he really wants to go traditional. I said, well, how old is he? Well, he's like 83. And this was a completely inappropriate remark on my part, but it made my point. I said, well, what good does it do to die with a manuscript in your drawer? Which was, again, very crass and very inappropriate, but it made my point. And I said, you don't have to choose one or the other. It's not you have to self-publish or traditional publish. You can do both because in self-publishing, you retain all your rights. And so a year went by, and all he did was collect a series of rejection letters. So a week before the LA Book Fair, she actually called me, and she said, are you going to be there again this year? And I said, yes. And she said, well, we've had a family meeting. My father had a little bit of a health incident, which you can have in your 80s, and we just decided we're going to get this book done. I said, that's fine. I'll be glad to talk to you. So she ended up getting it done. Her father got his book. It was just a memoir talking about Marlon Brando and all this stuff, just a very entertaining book. And then she stayed in contact, and her dad got to do book signings at places all over Hollywood, right, where people go. Carl Reiner, who many of you know, did the same thing. Carl Reiner self-published a book with us. He's in his 90s. He's got a staff. You know, he's a god in comedy, right? And he said, and this is what he said very sincerely, he said, because I said, why, you know, Mr. Reiner, why would you self-publish? You'd get an agent. Any publisher would take your book. And he had sadly just lost his wife, and he said, I'm 90, and he said, I've just got stories I want to get told, and when you're 90, you just don't know how long you're going to last, and so I want to get this done. So he's put out a wonderful book. The e-book actually has footage of him and Mel Brooks' family on vacation. It's just all these wonderful little things. The book's not going to change your life, but it's really, really wonderful. So he got it out in the market. It's out there now. Rights, you decide what you do with your rights. You control your rights. But with a traditional publisher, you grant them the rights, and they control it. Royalties, DIY, oftentimes they do it for you, but you're going to have to do it yourself for general contractor, and it's done for you. And then book sales, typically DIY is usually E and through the channel. General contractor can be both. Supported self-publishing is channel and direct. So you have an opportunity to sell books directly for yourself, which, again, previous to what I talked about the technological changes, you would do what was called vanity publishing, where your book really wasn't in distribution, and you had to buy 500, they would publish you for free, and you had to buy 500 books and 1,000 books, and they'd be in your basement or something. Now everything is print-on-demand technology, so you only have to buy the books that you think you can sell. But most people can actually do very well if they have speaking opportunities in selling books themselves.
Okay, I'm looking at the chart here on the projector and the screen,
yep.
And I'm looking at royalties, the column that talks about tracking royalties. Can you go through that column a little bit more on tracking royalties? Because in DIY, is there really royalties?
Yeah. So great question. So royalties, so if you upload to, like, for example, Booktango, which happens to be a DIY that we have, you'll sell an ebook. And depending on what the split is, that one happens to be 100% royalties. Anything that we get from the retailer, less their cut, which depending on the retailer and depending on the price, that royalty would be paid for you. So DIY is there's definitely royalties that can be made that way.
Do all e-books, if you totally DIY it, demand some kind of royalty? Or does the royalty come in when you go through a service?
No, you can DIY and earn a royalty depending on what you sell it for, right?
In regards to the tracking royalties, what about the profit side of it too? Because you really haven't touched on that, and I know you've got more cost involved from a traditional printer, obviously, because they're taking the option of doing all this work for you. So
so there's definitely a trade-off in terms of. I've always tried to figure out how to do this. There's some kind of investment that you have to make. If you sell more books, you will make more money per book if you do it DIY or general contractor, assuming that you have a good book and you know your audience. If you put out a crappy book because you don't want to spend money, you're not going to make money. But your per book. Your per book earnings will probably be higher in those. Your opportunity for volume, right, comes down here. So you'll earn less per book. So there's some kind of graph, which I'm not real good at that stuff, right? There's some kind of relationship. The other thing is supported self-publishing is often for people who just, and I'll talk about it, you're going to earn less because their services, just like, the margin that it's going to cost you more to eat a meal at a restaurant because there's a lot of services around there, but you're still going to earn money. The people who tend to do supported self-publishing, they either don't want to mess with all this stuff, they don't have time to mess with this stuff, or they're just at a place in their life where they're just like, you know what, I just want someone to do it for me. Does that make sense? I think I've answered your question.
It makes a lot of sense. So in our model, in Mark's and my model, if we were short on sales and we wanted to boost sales because our forte was in content and in writing that content, then for us, probably the best model would be supported. We don't want to give up everything, but Is that, am I right? Am
yeah,
I
well, yeah, I
right?
would need a little more detail, but it could be, right? Because it could be. So then that supported works for people whose core business is something else, right? And they want someone to just take care of everything for them. So they get money, but they don't get as much as if they do everything else. That makes sense? Yeah, so it's just a margin. Yes, sir.
I just like you to explain more about channel and direct. I don't understand.
Okay, good question. Thank you. So the channel is, and that's maybe an industry term, where it's sold through a distribution channel. So channel could be two things. It could be for print, online retailers like Barnes & Noble, Amazon. That's considered the channel. Books a Million. Yeah. That's considered the channel. Or if it's sold through a bookstore and it's a print book, that's considered the channel. Depending on there's just so many variables, depending on the retailer, depending on the price, depending on what it is, you'll earn a royalty if it's sold through the channel. E-books now are a channel as well, too. So Kindle's a channel, iPad, Apple's a channel, Nook, Kobo, Sony used to be a channel. And all of those have different deals. If you've paid attention to it, the DOJ and Apple and the publishers have been in a stir about that whole thing. So that's what a channel is. So, a book goes into distribution, Apple sells it, there's an agreement that whoever has published it has with them, and then you earn that margin, you earn whatever your royalty is. Does that clarify?
That's channel.
Yeah. Direct is, let's say you speak so if I were speaking here and I and sometimes, so if you only do an ebook, you can't sell direct books, right? But there's a number of authors who do pretty well doing that.
Or yeah. Direct through your website.
Yeah, you could do direct through your website as well, too. So I will answer your question. Let me give you an illustration. So we're doing a book for the Children's Museum of Indianapolis. So this is an ad. If you've never been to Indianapolis, you've never been to the Children's Museum, have you been? It is the best. I live there, okay? So it's the best children's museum in the world, hands down. Doesn't matter what age you are, you will enjoy it. They have a book that they want to do. So we had this discussion. So we're going to do something unique for them. Print-on-demand doesn't work well for color hardcover, but it works well, okay. It works okay for color and black and white. So we're actually going to do a book that's a color hardcover that they're going to sell in their museum gift shop and through their website. But in distribution on Amazon, they're going to have a color paperback and a black and white paperback. And again, for me, that's beautiful because the conversation we start, what do you want to do? Well, they want a commemorative one. And we went through all this stuff and said, well, you can do all of that. And they were just like blown away. So now they can create these really nice hardcover ones that they'll almost be like, keepsakes that you can only get two places on their website. So they'll inventory some and they're going to have to do that. But then if someone goes to the Children's Museum and I tell you about it and you're like, you should go get that book, you go to Amazon tomorrow or you get an ebook tomorrow. That's why it's the best time in history to be an author. So anyway, okay, another question back there.
Just to follow on about the channel versus direct, in the general contractor column, the question mark after channel is because why? Because it depends what you choose?
Yep, it depends on what you choose, and you have to figure out how to work with Amazon, and you have to figure out, I will tell you this, two things. My experience is most bookstores will not carry a CreateSpace book or an Amazon book. So if part of your goal is you want to be in bookstores, they're not going to do it. Some of them just do it from a moral standpoint. But the other thing is bookstores require books to be returnable. So this goes back to the Depression. If you know anything about book retailing, that Barnes & Noble can order in an order of books, and they can return those if they don't sell them at a certain point. So most retailers, particularly now, won't order books in unless they're returnable. So part of, again, but part of what we created as part of supported self-publishing is we have a program that makes books returnable. It doesn't guarantee that a retailer will order it in, but it removes the obstacle that retailers have for ordering books in. So that's why the question mark is. So you have to figure out how you're going to make your books returnable, which is a little more difficult. So does that answer your question, ma'am? Okay. All right. Let me go on to a couple things, and I'll take a few more questions. So this is which is the best path for you. What are your goals and expectations, right? If your goal is just to be on Oprah, the Today Show, and reach every man, woman, and child in the planet, I would tell you none of these options will work for you. But there are people that I've talked to that was their, that has been their goal. That has been their goal. And what are your expectations? Are you going to try and sell, a lot of books? Are you going to try and impact people? Because here's the thing that I've learned myself as being a self-published author, is I do not know how many books you will sell if you publish, but I know how many you will if you don't. But the most important thing is I don't know how many people you will impact through your writing, but I know how many you will if you don't. And the thing that I've learned is you get the opportunity, if you put your book in the market, to impact people that you may never, ever meet. And that is one of the greatest joys of being an author in this day and age. Three quick stories. The first book that I did is a book called A Clear View. I didn't intend to write a book. I actually was helping a friend develop some material for the church that he worked at. We couldn't find a book to fit these questions, so I said, I'm just going to write it. So I wrote it out. Then we started getting requests for it, and this is like 2004. It was a hassle to go to Kinko's and run off those things, and every time someone wanted them, it was $45. So I thought, I wonder if we could get this. And I thought, there are a lot of people aren't going to buy this book, and that's when self-publishing was starting. That's how I started in this whole industry. So I self-published this book called A Clear View. It's a book, and again, I don't even know how many it's sold. It doesn't really matter. Because here's the cool part about it. About 4 years ago, I got an email in January from a guy named Ronaldo from Italy. Never met the guy. He said, I want you to know we've been using your book at this institute where I teach at, and we have a publisher who's interested in translating it into Italian, and we'd like to have permission to do that. I'm like, what? So I emailed him, and I said, how did you get this book? I don't even know who you are, whatever. And he said, well, someone attended a conference that someone who had your book gave it to him. And I found out a guy I knew went to a conference in Europe, spoke, gave this guy, another guy from Italy, my book. They took it back. They've been, reading it, and now they wanted to translate it in Italian. And I said, well, that'd be fantastic, right? And so he said, but there's one thing. We want you to write another chapter for the Italian version. So this is January. I said, hey, no problem. When do you need it by? He said, May 31st. I said, no problem. You know when I started on the last chapter? May 1st. You know when I turned it into him? May 30th. Yeah, I got it by a day. I think it might have not been a day. But anyway, so then, they spent the summer. They translated it. We go away for a holiday, Christmas holiday. We come home. I still remember this day. I come home, and there's a box on our porch, and it's got some snow on it. Like, huh, I wonder what that is. Probably some late Christmas gift. So we unpack the car, and I take that box, and I slice it open, and I open it up. And there's 8 copies of this book translated into Italian. And I just thought for a moment, what an amazing time to be alive. Because here's a bunch of people who I've never met who thought enough of some words that I put down on paper to use it and translate it. And so in my office at home, I have, copies of the English version. And I've never given away one of those Italian versions because it tells you the impact. There's another guy that I know that he was actually a professor, and he was writing a book, and it wasn't for a scholarly reason. He just had a book he wanted to write. He worked on it 10 years, and I read it. It was a book on church history and Western culture, and it was a sort of a unique take on things. And he'd written it. He'd spent 10 years. And I read the manuscript. It was really quite good, very approachable. But he wouldn't submit it. And he's just like, he's just concerned it wasn't exactly right. And I looked at him, and he had some other peers look at it. I looked at him, and I said, well, you can do a second edition. And he had never thought about that. So he actually sent the book out, or he self-published the book. And the reason I tell his story is a few months later, I was in a parking lot, and he saw me across the parking lot, and he stopped, and he yelled, and he came over. He said, I got to tell you something. He goes, I'm so glad I did that, he said, because I got an email today from a professor at a college in Vancouver, and he had found my text, and he's using that book for his class because he thought it fit exactly what he wanted to teach. And he goes, if I never would have got it out there, I would have never done that. I could tell you 100 stories. I could tell you more stories on myself. That's the beauty of the time in which we live. You have the opportunity to impact people in ways that you never did. Last story I tell you. There was a woman, lives 2 hours outside of Brisbane, Australia, I think it's 2 hours. Her name is Bronnie Ware. She's a palliative nurse, and she deals with hospice, and she found that there were some common things. You're nodding your head. You must know the story. You want to tell it?
No.
Okay. So anyway, so Bronnie Bronnie ends up writing a blog post first called The Top Five Regrets of the Dying, because she started to see a common theme among the people that she was caring for at the end of their life. And she thought, you know, this would be a good book. She got amazing response on her blog. So she decides to write a book. She's in the middle of Australia. How is she going to find an agent? So she goes and she searches on the internet, and she finds Hay House, has a self-publishing imprint called Balboa Press. I like Hay House, she says, so I'm going to go with Balboa Press. So Bronnie publishes that book through Balboa Press, which we happen to operate for Hay House. And the local paper runs an article, and The Guardian in the UK picks it up. And within 30 days, it's all over Facebook. Book takes off. And Hay House watches that, because that's why they have a self-publishing imprint. And they decide they want to make that a Hay House book. And this is an absolute true story. I could not make this up if I wanted. So the person who runs Hay House in Australia, a guy named Leon, calls Bronnie and says, Bronnie, this is Leon from Hay House. I just want you to know we'd love to offer you a contract and make you part of the Hay House family. And he says, Bronnie, is everything okay? It sounds a little noisy. And she says, yeah, everything's fine. I'm just here. I'm having my baby. She answers the phone. She's not quite giving birth, but contractions are starting. And she says yeah. And then she says, oh, and this is what she says, oh my, the promise is true. And so here she is. She had published with the hope that she would get this. And so I've met her, and she actually will tell this story. She'll speak all over now, and she tells the story, and she goes, it was the best day of my life. She goes, I had a healthy baby, and I got a traditional publishing contract. And I said, Bronnie, there's not another person in the world that can tell that story. And I said, first of all, why do you answer the phone in the maternity? So you just never know, that can happen. And it's actually been the most successful international rights book. So what are your goals and expectations? What's your skills and experience? What time commitment can you make? And what budget are you going to have? Those are all key questions for you to ask yourself. So let me, I think we got like 5 minutes. Let me see if there's any other questions that anyone has that I can answer.
I'll just throw this out. I have worked with a pair of authors who I think have chosen the wrong method. And theirs is traditional publishing, but it's with a university press, and their book is really more of a trade book. And the university press is just completely not equipped to promote it, and in fact, they weren't equipped to design it properly. When the first edition came out, the fine print, I mean, the whole book was in such fine print that the audience for it would be turned off, because it's a lot of, like, people with not the greatest eyesight, maybe, who might want to be reading this book. And now the university press has said, oh, well, we think we can do better, and we're going to put out a second edition. But all of a sudden, the university press is kind of like trying to take it over and make it more scholarly and change the content, tell the authors, well, we want you to write this, we want you to change this. And I know I should be talking to one of the lawyers about how they could get out of it. Yeah. But I just want to offer that as an example of, like, oh, whoopee, I got a traditional publisher. That means I'm... you know, I'm really in the big leagues. But if it's the wrong traditional publisher, it could be worse than nothing.
Yeah, we should have, there's four paths, but there should be like a publishing GPS. And so when you were describing that, what I was hearing in my head was recalculating, right? Need to take a different route. Yeah, and I can't tell you how to get out of those deals. So go ahead.
So early on in self-publishing for trade press, there was a bit of a stigma attached to it.
Yeah.
And I think in academic, it's probably more so.
Yes.
Do you see that stigma? And in trade press, obviously, since then, it's gone away. There's a lot of really successful authors there. Do you see that change? Has it already changed in academia? Is it changing? Is it still to come?
I should let Roth answer that question, because he and I have had probably 4 hours of conversations in the time we've been here. It's not there yet, but what I saw in trade publishing is that the rate of change accelerated. And all that, when we got bought by Penguin, it validated. I think academics are the next place to change. It just hasn't happened yet. And we went from, I mean, literally, I got asked to go to panels, and I didn't realize that I was there to be the whooping boy, right? Because everyone thought it was just this bastardized version. And then we started seeing successes. And in 2012, Penguin buys you know, author solutions, and the whole world changes. There's a really great blog post on. So I think it's got to happen in academics. It just hasn't happened yet. And actually, Roth and I, who sit next to you, he and I have had conversations. I think we can help make that change because I think there's opportunity. It actually doesn't make things worse. It changes some models, but it actually makes things better. Democracy, I'm biased. Democracy is a good thing, and that's what would happen. So. But it's not there yet. There's still a stigma. University presses, we've been trying to talk to them for 5 years. You know, again, I feel like a leper sometimes when I walk around. So unclean. Anyone else? Any other questions? All right. So last thing is I've got a blog that if you're interested, I wish I posted more, but I try and post things that are relevant. So, and it's indiebookwriters.com. And then I have a Twitter account as well, too, if you want to follow that. I know I've had a couple of TAAs have retweeted some stuff. So anyway, all right, well, thank you for your attention, and I'll be around if you have any other questions. Hopefully it's been helpful. Lots of literature also on our table, and we're glad to be here for the first time. Thank you. Thanks.